It's time again for Health Talk on KFAR Radio. 30 minutes of healthy conversation about practical ways to improve your quality of life. Now, from the all-new White Spruce Medical, here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks. Welcome to Health Talk. My name is Dr. Scott Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. With me today is Dr. Russell Pierce. Dr. Pierce practices family medicine at Gold Star Longevity and Wellness here in Fairbanks. And today we're going to talk about metabolic syndrome. Dr. Pierce, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So, Dr. Pierce, tell us about metabolic syndrome. Well, like, what is it and why is it important?
Metabolic syndrome, there's many definitions, but basically metabolic syndrome, when you think about prediabetes is to diabetes. Metabolic syndrome is to cardiovascular disease. That doesn't mean that everybody has metabolic syndrome is going to get cardiovascular disease, just like it doesn't mean that everybody has prediabetes is going to get diabetes. But it's a metabolic derangement that can lead to devastating effect.
What's the mechanism? What's the connection between the two?
So the exact mechanisms, we're still working on it. One of the biggest mechanisms is actually insulin resistance and how your fat cells release interleukins and cytokines that cause a whole bunch of inflammation in your tissues, and your body doesn't uptake insulin correctly. Insulin causes a whole bunch of inflammation, which causes downstream effects.
So insulin does a lot of things to people. It's a hormone, and most people know it because it's used to treat diabetes. So the common knowledge is that it's used to help sugars get from the bloodstream into the cells. But really, it does a lot more than that.
The last time I checked, there was 136 different things that it did. I don't think we should talk about all of them today. I think people get bored.
Well, some of the key ones is it causes cholesterol to go up.
Yep.
Right?
I think the three biggest ones that I talk to my patients most about is, one, you have to have insulin. You got to get sugar into the cells, glucose into the cells. Glucose gets turned to ATP. We run on ATP. We're not diesel. We're not gas. We're not electric. We're ATP.
Yeah, right.
So you need to have the insulin in the cell or the cell. That's the one good thing it does. It does a couple of the good things, but most of the other things are actually not good. One is it's the major fat-storing hormone of your body. It's a lipogenic. Lipo means fat. Genesis means the beginning of. So it causes fat storage, which those fat cells are releasing the cytokines or hormones, interleukins, that cause all the metabolic derangement. The other thing, the other really big thing that people don't realize, insulin is the major inflammatory cytokine of your body, which means it causes inflammation. So the more insulin you have, all the little aches and pains that you have in your body, they're going up. You get rid of the insulin, you're not going to be as inflamed as much.
Yeah, so I'm going to reiterate what you just said because I want people to really get it. Mm-hmm. Insulin makes you fat.
I tell people, most people know what anabolic steroids are. Uh-huh. Bodybuilders, football players, baseball players use them, right, for enhancement.
Yeah.
Anabolic steroids are to muscle, like insulin is to fat.
Yeah. It stimulates. It's the mechanism that to cause it. So I always think of insulin as if times are good, blood sugars are high, your blood's running rich, it's time to take the extra, pack it away for a rainy day.
Store it. Yep.
Yeah, so it's a useful thing. It's in the world it's helpful, except for it doesn't rain.
Yeah. As we evolved, it was great, right?
Yeah.
When we were feasting and we had an animal down, we could store a lot of it for the next day in case we didn't get anything.
Yeah.
The problem now is we used to live in a very calorie sparse environment. But in the last 40, 50 years, we now live in a very caloric abundant environment. And our bodies haven't evolved yet to learn how to deal with that. And it's causing some metabolic derangement.
Yeah, the reason why we're talking about this first is because this is the scourge of our times. So much disease comes from this particular problem. Now, it's interesting because I know about metabolic syndrome, and I always think of it as a precursor to diabetes. It's interesting that you see it as a precursor to cardiovascular disease. Now, I know there's a connection. Diabetes relates to the cardiovascular disease. But I'm interested in why the emphasis on cardiovascular disease as opposed to, you know, the other ravages that come from high insulin.
Number one, cardiovascular disease over the age of 50 is the number one killer.
Well, there's that.
That's pretty good reason
right there.
If you want longevity, if you want to live longer, not getting cardiovascular disease is important. The other thing is we're finding out everybody thinks cardiovascular disease is a disease of the elderly. You start developing cardiovascular disease as a child, you know. We're now seeing plaques in children as young as 13 and 14. So I think it's pretty important that, hey, we don't look at cardiovascular disease as just, hey, when you turn 50, all of a sudden you have to go to see the cardiologist to get your cath, put your stent in, and life is better.
Yeah.
This is a slow working up process, and if we could stop that process sooner, the less adverse side effects we're going to have from it and less cardiovascular cripples that we're going to have,
yeah,
the burden of it. Because once you have a heart attack, your longevity and your whole projection, health projection, health status starts declining.
Yeah, so it's not just a matter of getting heart disease and like say, getting a stent put in or something like that, because what happens is you get tired and you get weak, and as you're climbing stairs, you find you can't do the whole flight of stairs anymore. You have to stop halfway and pant your way up the stairs, right?
Yep. I tell my patients, number one, one of the first signs of cardiovascular disease is exercise intolerance. If you could normally walk up two flights of stairs, and a month later you're having to stop on the landing, you need to go talk to somebody.
Yeah, something's broken. Bad, something's not working right. You know, the thing that frustrates me is that a lot of times patients will, one of the things will show up is they'll have high blood pressure. They'll check it at the doctor, or they'll get it checked at the grocery store, or somebody will buy a blood pressure cuff or mm-hmm. wrist thing, right? And they'll find out they have high blood pressure. And then they go to the doctor, and the doctor puts them on blood pressure medication, calls it good, right?
Yeah, that's sad. Shouldn't be that way. Even the major, it's called the JNC 7/8, and there's an 8 version. It's how we treat blood pressure. It says that we should do 6 months of lifestyle modifications before throwing medications. Unfortunately, it's a lot easier just to write a script and say, Here's your lisinopril, be on your way. Not the greatest way to do medicine.
Yeah, I agree. I always try to find the deepest level to treat people at. And the problem with that is it takes lifestyle modifications and motivation. Not everybody's up to it. But I'm lucky in a sense. I'm a naturopathic doctor, and pretty much there's this force field in front of my clinic where you can't penetrate it unless...
God, I wish I had one of those force fields.
You're willing to come and do stuff. Because pretty much everybody sits in my office. They're like, okay, I know I got to do something. What is it? What can I do, right? So occasionally somebody will come in and say, well, I took the medications and I don't like the way I feel on them. I feel tired and punky and impotent and that's the kind of stuff. Isn't there an herb you can take? You know, and I'm like... yeah, well, the herbs kind of do the same thing that the meds do.
Correct.
A lot of times, right? It's like raufia. You take enough raufia, yeah, your blood pressure will come down and you'll feel punky and tired and depressed and all the side effects that come from it.
Yeah, take enough foxglove to get enough digoxin, your blood pressure will be non-existent, but it's not, you know, we should look at better ways to do it.
Good.
And you know, when you start talking about putting the blood pressure and the metabolic syndrome together, it's interesting how they're connected. People don't realize that the inflammation that's in the endothelium, or the inside or the skin inside your arteries, can actually trigger that. The inflammation can cause restriction or constriction, and it can cause inflammation, which narrows your pipes, basically. Smaller pipes, same amount of fluid. What happens? Blood pressure goes up.
Blood pressure goes up.
So you get rid of the inflammation, make your pipes bigger, blood pressure goes down.
So let's...
And there's a lot of new research on endothelial inflammation and the health of the endothelium.
So I think this is really interesting because there's a mechanism, and it's not that hard to do, really, to bring down the inflammation. Mm. There's a zillion things you can do, all kinds of stuff. Let's trade back and forth. What do you like to use?
The biggest thing I like to do is just limit the amount of insulin somebody has in it. It's the major inflammatory cytokine.
So how do you do that?
Tell them not to eat stuff that causes insulin to spike.
Which is?
Donuts. What I guess we call healthy food, yeah. Well, you know, there's actually a lot of food out there that people think are healthy that are like donuts. You know, I can't tell you how many people have come into my office and said, man, I really like that oatmeal, that quicker oatmeal that, you know, is maple brown sugar
with
oatmeal. It's just wonderful. And you know what? Right on the box, it says it helps lower cholesterol and it's approved. But I look at it. I went to an obesity conference many years ago, and they talked about which is healthier, America's most popular oatmeal or America's most popular donut. And they had a debate. And I actually showed up sort of late, and there was all the people on the oatmeal side, and there was like a whole bunch of chairs. So I went on the donut side and started talking about it. And the lecturers started talking about it and said, well, what's the first ingredient in your donut?
Wheat.
Flour.
Yeah,
right?
Flour.
What is oatmeal after you roll it and you get rid of the bran and all the protein, which is the brown part of the oatmeal? So the white part that is left is, we call it the endosperm.
Right.
It is flour, essentially.
Yeah.
So the first two ingredients is a push. Same thing.
Yeah.
It's the inside of one's an oat kernel or oat groat and one's a wheat berry, but pretty much the same thing. Second ingredient, sugar in the donut. So just to tell you, the donut was a chocolate. It was a glazed chocolate dipped Dunkin' Donut was the most popular donut that year. The second ingredient is sugar with trace nutrients in the chocolate. They were giving it very...
It's got some antioxidants in it.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if you're getting like... If you're getting like cacao from, you know, Hawaii or something, uh-huh. I don't know about Dunkin' Donuts, but they gave it credit. Then they looked at the oatmeal. And the second ingredient was maple syrup. Maple syrup, sugar, trace nutrients.
Right.
Maple syrup has flavonoids and certain...
Yeah.
So push.
Yeah.
Third ingredient in your oatmeal is brown sugar. So you have more sugar. Third ingredient in your donut is actually fat.
Yeah.
So which is healthier? Flour, sugar, sugar, or flour, sugar, fat?
Flour, sugar, fat.
Fat doesn't cause as much insulin response.
Right.
It lasts longer, causes a whole bunch of other things to happen. So which is healthier, your donut? So right as the lecture was, you know, getting spun up or almost ending, a guy on the oatmeal side raised his hand and says, well, I put a big dollop of butter in my oatmeal. Gives it a better mouthfeel and creamier.
Yeah.
So the guy who was on the lecture side on our side said, so what you're saying to me is you're adding butter to your oatmeal to make it as healthy as a donut. Who in here thinks donuts are healthy? And nobody raised their hand, and we all laughed and left the auditorium. But I thought it was a very interesting lecture.
You know, it's interesting that when you look at food, it doesn't always add up to what you think it is. I'll give you another example. Granola bars. Now, granola bars, I mean, they're healthy. They're made with granola, right? Except for they're not. They're another kind of candy bars, but they are. I had a patient today who has metabolic syndrome, and she said, we were talking about what she could eat, and she said, well, what if I get hungry? Can I have a granola bar? And I'm like, gah!
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's like saying you can have a healthy Snicker bar, right?
Yeah, healthy. It's got peanuts in it.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to do it.
And I actually feel bad for the lay people, you know, people who don't study nutrition and biochemistry and stuff. There's a lot of confusing information. There's a lot of advertisement to your granola bar, you know, that makes it sound like it's healthy.
Yeah. Whole grains.
Yeah.
Right? But and honey.
Yeah.
It's honey. And it's organic.
Yes. It's very frustrating. So, and then you look at a bowl of, Lucky Charms, for example. It's got the American Heart Association sticker right on there. Says lower cholesterol.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it does. And it's like, I really have a hard time thinking of a food that will cause cholesterol to go up more than marshmallows. You know what I mean?
It's marshmallows and flour mixed together. Yeah,
and a little sugar.
And
they put it through an extruder and add a bunch of chemicals. It just can't be healthy.
So I have been doing something since the spring that's been super helpful in helping people figure out what to eat and what not to eat, and that is continuous glucose monitoring. Have you been doing that?
Oh, I do it all the time. Yeah.
Tell us about it. What is it?
Definitely all of my diabetic patients, and then my patients who actually want optimal health, we talk about CGMs or continuous glucose monitors. So it's just a little, we call them either, there's a Dexcom or a Freestyle Libres, the ones we use. And they're just little dots that go on the back of your arm. Doesn't really hurt to put on. It's a little Teflon straw that goes into subcutaneous tissue underneath your skin.
I was amazed it didn't hurt.
Yeah. I was sort of too. I was ready to flinch and really.
Nope. Don't feel anything.
The nurse had it in and was like, yeah, okay. And it continuously monitors your blood sugar for about 14 days. And you can take, instead of poking your finger three or four or five times a day, you can do 5,000 readings. You can do a reading whenever you want. And we use them a lot for teaching. So I tell people, hey, put this on and I want you to eat.
Yeah.
And if there's a food that spikes your blood sugar more than 60 points, 40 points, definitely 80 points, you can't eat it.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be eating because those fluctuations aren't very good for you.
Yeah.
And there's weird foods. I have one of my diabetic patients, she eats a banana and her blood sugar goes from 60 to 220. I didn't think there was that many calories in bananas.
So there's some kind of reaction.
She actually is also allergic to latex, and there's a little cross reactivity with bananas and latex. So I'm not sure if there's something going on there. But I would have never believed it had I not seen the actual reading.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about these is everybody's different. Some people react to foods much stronger than other people do, and you'd never know, really. I mean, if you're super sensitive, maybe you could kind of guess at it, but you don't have to be super sensitive to guess at it. You could simply look at the spikes, and the thing to do is you record the information, and it shows on your phone. You pair it with your phone. That's what pretty much everybody's doing.
Yep.
And then you write down what you eat, and you simply, at the end of the day or at the beginning of the day, for that matter, you look for the spikes. You look for there should be kind of rolling hills, and you look for mountain ranges or Mount Everest where it shoots up and comes down, and then you just simply correlate what you ate. I did this today with a patient, and she was shocked because it was oatmeal.
Yeah.
Absolutely shocked. That's healthy, Dr. Looper. No, it isn't. That's oatmeal.
What are you putting on your oatmeal? It's what I always ask them.
Right.
And then they all like give me that quizzical
look.
It
comes out of that little package, right?
Yeah. So.
It turns out oatmeal can be a really good food.
I agree. The beta glycans in there can definitely bind to cholesterol and lower cholesterol. I tell my folks, hey, get some oat groats, which are the whole oat kernels, and cook them and, you know, excellent. Cook them overnight in a crock pot.
Yeah.
Have the best oatmeal you ever had. Totally okay.
Yeah.
You know, dice an apple, put it in with the oatmeal.
The groats take a while to do. I found I use the steel cut oats. They're hunks enough. You make it a face.
The problem I have with steel cut oats, you know that there's an instant seal cut oat.
Which is?
You can cook in a minute.
Is
so,
there?
So the question I have for you is, if you can you cook a steak in a minute?
No.
Can you cook beans in a minute?
No.
So that's the good part of the oat grow, right? The fiber on the outside, that brown stuff, that's the bran.
Yeah.
And right below the bran before you get into the endosperm is where the protein is. And they take all that out. Why?
Oh.
Because your steel cut oats,
they'll go bad.
You wanna cook it in a minute.
Yeah, so the ones I do are 10-minute steel cut oats.
So there's a little brownness to your
It takes a while. Otherwise, they're chewy.
You know, the interesting thing, I have a love-hate relationship with oatmeal because I actually do eat oatmeal when I make it out of oat groats. But you go from oatmeal, which is flour, to steel cut oats, and there are some, they just cut them once and it cuts the cooking time in half. And they look, they don't look white. They look more of a brownish tan color.
Uh-huh.
And then you have the oat groats that are actually tan color. The tanner you get, the better, healthier, because that's the fiber, that's the bran, that's the protein. That's the good stuff, not the flour, which is in the center. The problem with your steel cut oats, if they're white or you can cook them in less than 3 minutes,
yeah,
you know all that good stuff's been taken out.
Yeah, and you know the thing, they'll take it out because it'll improve the shelf life. The more of the stuff that's oily or proteiny or those kind of things, they're more likely to go rancid and they won't keep.
Correct.
So you can if you extract all of that, you can keep that stuff for years.
Yeah, because there's no nutritional value. I don't even know if the bacteria will eat it.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's what I tell my patients. I say, if it's rotten, throw it out. If it won't rot, throw it out.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because if it won't rot, it's not good for you either.
Yep.
The other thing about the oatmeal that I do that it makes it more tasty and more healthy is I chop up a handful of nuts and throw it in because I get extra protein from that.
Good.
And also about a half cup, maybe 3/4 cup of berries. It turns it purple for sure, but it makes it tasty and delicious. I like the berries. The berries and the nuts.
But the problem is you're in the minority here. What do most people put in their oatmeal?
Sugar.
Or
butter.
Or honey.
Yeah, honey. Or
maple syrup.
Maple syrup, those kind of things,
Syrup is just another name for liquid sugar.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, now we're back to the metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Because what triggers the insulin to go up, which is wrecking us, is sugar. Blood sugar's going up. The funny thing is about sugar, it's not always sugar. You could give an example. The oatmeal without any sugar in it can do this. Wheat.
Because it's a flour.
Yeah, because it's a flour. So what's, tell us about the difference.
Your gut, your stomach. So first of all, I guess we should talk about how things are absorbed in your body a little bit. In your stomach, there's essentially only two things that are absorbed, and that's alcohol and water. Everything else has to be transitioned into your small intestine before it gets absorbed, and different part of the small intestine absorbs different things. But in the small intestine with your sugar and your flour, they're broken down already by the acids of your saliva, your amylase, and the acids of your stomach have already broken down the processed carbohydrate into glucose. So it's ready to go.
Yeah.
It's going to spike your blood sugar just like that.
Yeah.
And what happens when blood sugar spikes? Insulin's following.
Yep.
And then if you're a little insulin resistant, now, instead of getting a little insulin, you're getting a yak ton of insulin. You're getting a lot. And that's what's causing all this metabolic derangement stuff.
Yeah. So I was interesting. I saw the research where they compared people who are eating toast with people who are eating sugar out of the sugar bowl with a spoon. And the toast people had their blood sugars go higher.
Yeah, correct. Yep. That's because sugar, the sucrose has fructose and sucrose in it, and it takes a while to break that bond up. And your fructose has to actually go through your liver to be processed, where your toast doesn't have to.
Nope.
It's off to the races we go.
Yeah. The worst one I found is bagels. Bagels are the worst. For me personally, they'll shoot my blood sugars up higher, quicker, better, faster than anything. And I think the reason why bagels are such a problem, I've wondered about this. In fact, when I discovered it by my kids telling me, Dad, don't eat that. we want to do something today.
There you go.
Because I'd be asleep in 40 minutes.
Yeah, you drop your blood sugar and just feel like a slug.
So bagels and donuts both would do this to me, and I suspected the hole had something to do with it.
I don't know about that part, but I've had this argument before. Which is healthier, the bagel or the donut?
It's the donut's more healthy because it's got the fat in it. Now, you can take a bagel and pack some...
You put a little bit of oil in your bagel, but...
And you can put butter on it, and you can put cream cheese on it, and you can put lox on it. And, well, here's what I found. I can eat bagels. If I cut it in half, and then take that half, and I cut it in half, and then I take that half, and I cut it in half, and I get this little square.
Yeah.
And I'm fine. I can eat that. I'm okay. It doesn't give me a problem. I'm fine with it. But the problem with bagels is they're so dense. They're basically boiled bread. So there's hardly any holes in it. It's just dense bread all the way along. So it's like four slices of bread or more in one unit. It just overwhelms your system with the amount of, flour. It's packed very efficiently.
Yeah. There's very few foods on the obesity scale that ounce for ounce are worse than bagels. You know what the worst one is? Pretzels, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Because they're dried out flour.
Yeah.
There is no water. There's no air. They're just straight up sugar and flour.
Yeah.
So, but I agree with you with your bagel analogy.
Yeah, I'm not. Bagels, I could tell because it put me to sleep. That was the sensation that I get. And I think what's going on is my blood sugars are going so high, my insulin levels are skyrocketing high, which it gets high enough, it starts driving my blood sugars down, and then I'm tired.
Yeah, and the problem is, with you probably have normal insulin, so you have a normal response. If you had insulin resistance, and you had two or three times the amount of insulin, it's actually going to drive your blood sugar lower. And it's going to make you more tired.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. When I do workups for insulin resistance, prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, obesity, all these things, one of the things I do is check for insulin resistance. And people who have it, one of the things we do is a hemoglobin A1C. And these people who actually have metabolic syndrome and prediabetes, their hemoglobin A1C, so let's back up for a second. Hemoglobin A1C is normally 4.8 to 5.6 is normal. Mm-hmm. They'll have a blood sugar or hemoglobin A1C in the 4.8, 4.9 range. And the reason is that their blood sugar spikes so high, but then their blood sugar drops.
Yeah.
And they stay in that low range for such a long period of time that it affects the glycosylation of the hemoglobin, and they actually will have a low level of hemoglobin A1C instead of what you would think, which would be a pre-diabetic hemoglobin A1C.
Yeah, they are in fact are pre-diabetic, but it doesn't. Most doctors will miss it. That's the other thing.
Yeah, nobody does fasting insulins.
The conversation, except for me.
Yeah, well, I'm going to.
You and I are the only two in town that do them that I know of.
I can't speak for everyone, so I don't want to.
I haven't heard of it.
I don't want to just,
haven't heard of it. Let me say, haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is not just the fasting insulin. I'm doing insulin under load. I'm actually having people do glucose,
and then doing tests.
Yeah, that's right. Except for I'm doing the insulin. I get more information from the insulin part than I do from the blood sugar part.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm end up doing is having people do the continuous glucose monitoring. So I can get a better curve as they go through the test and then do serial insulin levels. And I can shake out the insulin resistance better and get actual numbers that we can repeat later and see how what we're doing. This is such an interesting conversation. This is so important. Everybody listening, the conversation we're having right now was probably the most important conversation in order to feel good and live long. This is a cornerstone. There's a reason why we started with this conversation. So, Dr. Pierce, let's continue this conversation. We got to stop the show because we're out of time right now. Let's pause, and then we're going to go ahead and pick this back up in a week. Now, you and I are going to do it right now.
Right.
But it's going to be a week till it shows again. So if you guys like the conversation, hang out for another week and you'll catch the next half of this thing. All right. I also want to let everybody know that Create Compost Outdoor Show follows this. And again, for those who joined late, I'm here with Dr. Russell Pierce. Dr. Pierce does family medicine at Gold Star Longevity and Wellness. Treats patient right here in Fairbanks. I want to let you know that I'm Dr. Scott Looper. I'm the medical director of White Spruce Medical, located at the Steese Medical Center here in Fairbanks. I want you guys to stay safe, stay healthy, stay in touch.
You've been listening to Health Talk on KFAR Radio, brought to you by White Spruce Medical in the Steese Medical Center. To listen back to this or any past programs, simply log on to KFARradio.com and go to the archives page for more Health Talk. Local stories, local programs, local news, local talk radio. We are KFAR.